Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 8th, 2003. Today's session is entitled American Tunes, and it's a forum with the Friesen Carper family. Number FRD 2003-02. Let's listen in.
That's the cue for him to start TV. It wasn't just like our family secret. Thank you all for coming this evening. I am Sarah Friesen Carper. I'm part of the Village Musician family for this week, and my family is all sitting over here to my right. So this evening we would like to perform to a few of our favorite patriotic songs and have kind of a time for shared reflection on some of those. The forum tonight was kind of born out of a desire for us to perform some of these songs just because we have them, we like them, we think they're kind of cool, and they don't really quite fit into the Vespers service so well. So we're just taking advantage of this opportunity to do that. But it's also kind of to think about things, reflect on things within this community, which our family finds interesting and exciting and also doesn't even necessarily agree upon all the time. So, but things that are big questions, kind of big questions that we address here at Holden, big sort of life questions in general. So as we're singing and performing, I invite you to pay attention to words or images or phrases that stand out to you, that are interesting, that are troubling, or, you know, just kind of stand out to you. And perhaps think within the context of my three big questions here. What does it mean to be an American, especially when we are at war? Given our political, social history, can we as a society leave violence behind? And what is a Christian's role in society? Like I said, broad questions, big questions, but those are kind of things to keep in mind as we're kind of going through. But what we really want you to do is kind of sit back, relax, take it all in, and then we will kind of reflect a little bit. So, here we go.
Many's the time I've been mistaken, and many times confused. Yes, and I've often felt forsaken, and certainly misused. But I'm all right, I'm all right, I'm just weary. Shattered or driven to its knees. But it's all right, it's all right. We've lived so well, so long. Still,
when I think of the road we're traveling on, I wonder what's gone wrong.
I was dying. I dreamed that my sorrows unexpectedly, and looking back down at me, smiled reassuringly. And I dreamed I was flying, and high up above. Sailing away to sea. dream now's flying.
Flying. We come on a ship they call the Mayflower. Come on a ship that sailed the moon. We come in the age's most uncertain hour. And sing an American tune.
It's all right. All right.
It's all right, it's all right. We can't be forever blessed.
Still tomorrow's going to be another
working day. I'm trying to get some rest. That's all I.
Many of you would have recognized that as a tune that we sing, O Sacred Head Now Wounded. And the text to O Sacred Head Now Wounded was actually written in the 1100s, and the tune itself was written in the 1500s. And I just want to read the line, because I think it's interesting, the first verse to O Sacred Head Now Wounded. O Sacred Head Now Wounded, with grief and shame weighed down, now scornfully surrounded, with thorns thine only crown. O sacred head, what glory, what bliss till now was thine, yet thou despised and gory, my words right here, I joy to call thee mine. The actual American tune was, the words to the one that we sang was written originally by Paul Simon, and the arrangement that we did is actually a Starline Vocal Band arrangement that was done shortly after the Vietnam War, or during the Vietnam War.
It was also actually performed, arranged by Starline Vocal Band, that's the arrangement that we did, and then performed again by Paul Simon in a September 11th Memorial Concert in New York City. So, one of the things that we find interesting, particularly about a number of these songs that we'll do for you tonight, is that they seem to continue to remain true. The tunes and the words remain true over time, kind of this cycle of truth. I don't know. They continue to be meaningful in people's lives.
Thank you.
thoughts of my friends, nor of my enemies either. Though he promised me much, I will not map him the route to any man's door. Am I a spy in the land of the living that I should deliver men to death? Brother, the password and the plans of our city are safe with me. Never through me shall you shall die, but that is all I shall do for death.
Setting of a poem in the St. Vincent Millay, copyrighted in 1934, so I believe that the references to the Balkans and to Cuba are turn of the century, First World War images. The poem itself is called Conscientious Objector. It's a song that I sang on my senior voice recital in college. It was written in the 70s. By Lee Holdridge, recorded by Mary Travers on the Morning Glory album. So you can actually hear the orchestral version on that if you get a hold of the CD. Pretty self-explanatory. My family was, we did not grow up in a Peace Church, but I became involved in the Peace Church at the end of my high school years because of issues surrounding.
This should be a familiar one for many of you.
Listen, children, to a story that was written long ago about a kingdom on a mountain and the valley folk.
Oh, Sarah and I and a friend of ours named Miranda Hansen, we put together a concert for peace in April at our local performance space, I guess is what you'd call it. And we were looking for stuff to do, and we decided to do that one, and we're like, you know, it'd be really cool to do One Tin Soldier, but it's just kind of lame just as One Tin Soldier. What's cool about that? What's worth performing about that? So, like, we should put something over top of it. And I'm like, maybe we should do Honorary Christian Soldiers. And then says, like, no, we should do the Star-Spangled Banner. And I'm like, wait a second. So we thought it brought together a lot of, kind of made our statement as to how we felt the country was moving at this time. And at this point, I'm going to pass it off to Sarah, who's going to finish it.
One Tin Soldier, as you probably know, is done for the movie Legend of Billy Jack and, in the 60s, and has remained then a favorite camp song kind of from then on. I know that's certainly where I learned it. So, actually, at this point, I would like to invite you all to share any sort of thoughts, images, or reflections that may have come up while we were singing. And I would just encourage you to remember that this is kind of an open forum, so feel comfortable to express, to freely express yourself, and also don't worry about offending us. I mean, we've kind of made our statement, so if you're going to criticize my voice, then, you know, maybe take me aside later and talk about it. But please feel free to just kind of openly talk about what some of the things were that stood out to you.
The line about the Statue of Liberty. I think about that and think about where we got it, you know. And I was visualizing it floating out to sea in France, going back home. You know.
Yeah. One of those Liberty fries.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you have the words available too, which may help a little bit? Oh, front.
Was this the first time hearing any of these songs for any of you?
A couple of them.
How many of you had never heard the first one, American Tune? Okay. How about Conscientious Objector?
Which one was the poem?
The second one.
The second one. I heard the poem.
Oh, the poem. Not the song.
Yes.
One striking thing about this song is that it has such a strong sense of tragedy, which I think connects very deeply at a human level and across cultures and across nations. And in the last year and a half, we've heard almost no sense of tragedy in almost all of our public discourse, which really is, I think, one of the reasons why our nation is such a frightening nation internationally. We have no sense of public sense of tragedy and our own complicity.
I think what I heard in what you were singing, maybe I wanted to hear that, was sort of a mix of a love for what you understand America to be, and yet that sense of grief, or in a willingness to not just go along with what is, and that somehow your love implies being able to say, this is not what I want to stand for. And prefacing that by, I'm not prefacing. My postlude is I'm post World War II first generation German, and my father fought in Hitler's army and probably without much conviction. I don't even know that. But growing up German always meant it was really difficult to have a sense of pride about your own heritage because of what Germany had done or my own kinfolk had done. And so coming here, I was always sort of startled by the expression of national sentiment. At some level, though, learning to appreciate the willingness to say this is beautiful. But then it hurts even more when I see people feel, or talk talk in a way that implies that if I love my country, then I have to agree with everything that goes on. Or, you know, I think that that is tragic in itself. People have that sense it has to be this way.
Part of the conversation in our family is that Michelle grew up in a traditional peace church in the Mennonite church, and I grew up, my parents were Evangelical United Brethren is probably the best way to describe them. We attended at various times in my life a Bible church, an independent Bible church. We United Methodist Church, and then finally Evangelical United Brethren Church. And so when it came time for the Vietnam War, you know, there are many medals that get passed down generation to generation in my family, and there's a lot of pride in the participation in the military. And I was the first person in my family to ever really express a question about whether one should go to war or not. And for me, it was very much a fundamentalist Christian conviction of, if I'm saved and he's not saved, how can I shoot him? And it was rather primitive theologically, but it was still a very deep conviction. And so then that began a struggle. And I still remember the days when I wanted to be a Marine. And there's still something about that that still is attractive to me. I still have a lot of empathy for the families who are grieving now, having lost family members or knowing that family members are on harm's way. I have a lot of empathy for Bonhoeffer and his choice about what am I going to do, knowing that this great evil is going on. And I don't consider myself at all anti-American. Michelle, on the other hand, has grown up in a tradition where war was just obviously wrong. And so how can you have sympathy for people who are involved in the military? And so this is one of our conversations on the way up the hill and back.
Yeah, I very much grew up in a peace tradition, and I recognize the fact that that was very much a minority in our country, but the very thought of killing another person just seems totally, completely antithetical to Christ's message to me, and I don't understand, having grown up that way, how people can go out and kill somebody else. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I come from, and that's obviously way on this end of it, I guess. I was doing it so they could see. You know, as a teacher, I learned that you do the opposite so they understand which direction you're going.
I have a question about the. I understand the Star Spangled Banner fits well, but I want to know more of that, like, of anything. I can't stand up and sing the Star Spangled Banner because it's a war song. And I was wondering why that fits with the tinsel.
Well, at the third verse, which is when it starts, is when the valley people are charging up the mountain to get this treasure that they believe the other people have. And it's kind of the battle cry, you know? And it's a battle cry. I feel like the way that our country is going, with just planting the seeds of violence everywhere, eventually there will be one tin soldier left, you know? And I feel like that the merging of those two songs kind of says that, yes, this is us. We are charging up the mountain. What are we going to do about it?
It's like Born in the USA.
Yeah.
I think the irony of the juxtaposition becomes more poignant for me because of how astonishingly well it works musically. I made like two little musical adjustments. Four got changed to three in one spot, and actually I don't know the tune as well as I ought to, so there were probably a couple of other little changes. Paul's been coaching me. But yeah, that the first time they sang it for me, I was just...
Yeah.
Quite powerful. Any other questions? needs to put that in his first album. Were there other images from the songs, though? Our intention here was to try and provide chances for reflection. We talked about this stuff all the time.
There's so much images. It's just remembering that I grew up with a father who was an academic down in Fresno when Reagan was in office. And you can imagine the disbelief when he got elected as United States president. But he spent a fair amount of time fighting some of the discrimination issues that were happening at the college level and in the community. And just knowing in those songs of that time period, I always bring up that and how important the music is in bringing those images back. If you had those stories when you were younger, because we're going through this stuff again, and we'll continue to go through it again. And I look forward to hearing or either reminding older songs, but also learning new songs in relation to them. That's just my dad. Good guy.
Yeah.
Here's what I'm thinking when you speak about how it was, and why is it that we're not hearing more of these types of songs now? What's happened in our nation that we are unable to, just like you expressed as a German person, that we can't dissent, or we can't even, you know? Mm-hmm. So where are the songs? Where are we all?
It's amazing to think that we were thinking the same thing when we were talking about this, and that One Tin Soldier was a top 40 hit when it was released. And
now that wouldn't fly.
And the Dixie Chicks were blacklisted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but they sold more records.
Yeah, we had people in our Audubon Society that went out the day that they were...
Sure.
They went right out and bought their stuff as fast as they could, so they got the environmental community.
Yeah.
Well, there is that communication that's going on, though. I know a friend of mine at the state office was funneling a lot of great information through the internet to me and through the large community that he had established, and that was really, really good information compared to what the TNT was putting out.
Yeah, the Tacoma paper.
Right, yeah.
But your question was sort of the music. Where's the music that does that? Wasn't it sort of?
I live in New York, and I know that in New York there's a lot of art music that's devoted to, you know, anti-war. There's a lot of, you know, contemporary music that's devoted to it. I mean, you know, even Phil Collins' latest album has something that's anti-government. I mean, these big pop artists, you know, Bono from U2 is very political. But I think the arena is different. I mean, you know, the young generation, my generation, doesn't sit around the campfire and sing songs anymore. It's more like it's this, you know, you drive in your car and listen to hip hop, you know. And so it's a different world.
The clubs aren't playing peace songs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like the internet has changed a lot of that way people communicate too. You know, it's not face to face anymore. There's a lot of power in numbers, and you just don't see that on the internet. I mean, you just see a lot of messages, you know, going back and forth that don't have the value that, you know, the peace marches and stuff like that.
I'm struck that you thought the music would be inappropriate for Vespers, since in some ways this expression of a yearning for peace and a criticism of the forces of violence belongs, I hope, in any Vespers or any Matins or any worship service. And what's astonishing to me is that so little of our hymnody really confronts these sorts of issues head on. That is, we deal with theological questions beautifully. And the Sacred Head, written supposedly by Bernard of Clairvaux, is a great example of that. But these frontal, I won't say assaults, but these frontal, these wrestlings with these issues that are life and death issues in our time are often never heard on Sunday mornings. And it's not that people on Sunday mornings don't care about these things, but our church services, mine at least, have almost said nothing over the last year about the agonies our nation and our world are in. Not that pastors don't care about it, not that people don't care about it, but I think there's a lot of fear, enormous fear, that the current administration has, I think, capitalized on as a force, a kind of tactic, and many people are just terrified. But our churches remain silent. That's the puzzle, and I hope tomorrow, maybe in our vespers, we might smuggle some music in.
Which one would you like to hear? Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how you feel as you hear a little longer. I think that those issues do come up in piquant ways. Part of it is that we have a repertoire of stuff, and as we've tried to parse it out through 25-minute segments, you know, that's been part of it. That these were songs that did not make a cut. So it's not that I guess that Holden would not be a place for some of these kinds of things.
But I mean, hearing a piece like
that, and they're also not God pieces.
But that's the point. Even hearing a secular piece, it raises these questions for people who are concerned about God and about God's justice. There's all kinds of filtering, and I think not translating but interpreting that we're doing, which is powerful.
I'm sort of disappointed that. In the liturgical music world, I mean, if you look at the Eucharist services or the Vesper services that are out there, they're all very passive. And they're very like, well, we worship God, you know, love us, hold us, and you know, make us feel good. But there's very little, Isaiah 61, let's go out, like the theme for this summer, let's go do something, you know. There's no activeness in the church right now. It's very like...
Your opening hymn this evening was one that was active, Micah 6:8.
True.
Yeah, well, here, Holden is much more active than anyone else.
Yeah. Right.
I can tell you that being in the Marine Corps is not always cracked up to be.
I didn't miss much, huh?
No.
Well, yeah.
A little self-discipline, maybe.
Yeah.
You seem to have enough of that to learn.
I can use it.
You can't learn music the way you guys learn music without a lot of self-discipline.
There is one hymn in the older, I think it was even in the red hymn book before the green hymn book. Must be from the First World War, I suppose, G.K. Chesterton's, "O God of earth and altar, bow down and hear our cry. Our earthly rulers falter, our people drift and die, the walls of gold entomb us, the words of hate divide." It's really a powerful hymn, and I know that during the Vietnam War, that was sung at church one Sunday, and everybody is in tears by it.
And it's Chesterton's. Is it in the Green Book?
No.
She said
it isn't in the Green Book. I think it's in the Green Book. It was in the Red Book, and I think it's in the Green Book. And it takes the litany then from war and pestilence and so on and puts that into poetry to deliver us, good Lord. From all the error teaches, from lies of tongue and pen, from all the evil speeches that comfort cruel men.
Yeah.
It's really
there you go.
From sleep and from damnation, deliver us, good Lord.
From sleep and from damnation. Yeah.
Is that the Green Book?
Yeah.
What's the title?
O God of earth and altar.
No, 428.
Oh,
thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you. It was interesting when I was writing the setting of the liturgy that we sang on Sunday night, to go through and discover how many references to peace there are. Nearly every one of those phrases, except for the acclamations, has peace in it, at least one spot in a key spot. And that was one of my goals was to lift that word up in the different places where it occurred. So I spent time with their harmonizations or that sort of thing. But yeah, it's really amazing how obsessed the text of the Mass seems to be with peace.
And I think it comes from a time I think when it's written, it's not just speaking about peace of mind or anything. It's speaking about, you know, we got soldiers out there looting and entering houses and killing people and all that. I think it really means it in a very good way. So.
And perhaps speaks to sort of a lack of interest in the liturgies that we do have. I mean, in terms of really sort of paying attention to the words that we're praying during the service and possibly being just more attentive, kind of this kind of goes back to what you're saying, but being more attentive in our services to what we do have and what we can cultivate from that as well.
And get people to do that by asking them to organize it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Other images or phrases that stuck out?
Interesting. We urge you to see it again.
Read the poem that you sang.
That we discussed when we sort of were looking at this song in particular was the way that it addresses lots of different issues. It talks about war, but it talks about other things too. It talks about sort of everyday kinds of things and the many varying forms of violence that there are kind of around and just kind of being aware of those sorts of things. Such as?
Yeah, this person is an active peacemaker,
mm-hmm.
not doing.
Right.
So, right, you get the images of not only Cuba and the Balkans, which obviously were wars, but then you go on to as much as killing the fox, and then particularly, I think the one that always gets to me when Paul sings it is, I, and with his foot on my breast, I will not tell him where the black boy hides in the swamp. And that one just sort of, ugh, really stings too, I think, when I hear that.
I was thinking about slavery when it said fox. I was thinking that maybe it was a runaway slave.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Well, that's true. That is probably where that is.
Although it might not be.
Might not be.
When was this written?
Copyright is 34. But I don't know when it was written. I was going to go on the internet to try to check.
Well, that's close.
But I couldn't.
But we couldn't hold it.
The internet was down.
Oh. Way down.
It's like
down,
a
down lake.
One thing that is striking to me, and this doesn't have to do with these particular texts, but how many artists are opposed to war. If you think about the major composers of the 20th century, for example, a person like Benjamin Britten, people who formed the War Requiem as one of the great, you know, pieces of the 20th century, and seem to be able to listen to it and enjoy it and be struck by how powerful it is to have these two shades singing to one another. Those of you who don't know the War Requiem, it's set, many parts of it are settings of poems by a fellow who was killed in the First World War, was a poet, and one of his poems, most powerful poems, which is the end, and the composer specifies that it should be an English tenor, a German baritone, and a Russian soprano. Singing in the piece so that the German baritone and the English tenor greet one another on the other side,
mm-hmm.
having killed each other. And or one of them is dead, I forget exactly. But how people can go to this, applaud for it, and then continue to go out and support the carnage that it's so deeply opposed to. It's amazing to me.
or two of the poems a poem is partly that he wrote them in the trenches, and he died in the trenches. He wasn't an artist sitting in Greenwich Village thinking about the struggle of violence somewhere else. He was in the middle of it, as were many artists, in that war and in other wars.
It's refreshing to come up here. I feel as if I'm surrounded at home by people who don't think the way I do, and when I come up here, I feel like I'm talking to all my favorite cousins. Really. And maybe we're wrong about what other people around us are thinking at home. Maybe we're just really too afraid to step right out and say, This is evil. What's going on is evil. What's going on in Guantanamo Bay is awful. It's terrible. Not in my name, thank you very much. And all the others that we heard about the last few days, about the people that are come here for what is it? Amnesty.
Refugee.
Yeah, the refugees and what's the other word? The ones that are refugees here.
Asylum seekers.
Yeah, asylum seekers, right. They go to jail, and they're in our jails, in our local county jails for 9 years, for crying out loud. 9 years, this one gal was working with them. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to get this guy out of jail for 9 years. He's in there. And all he is trying to get away from being butchered in his own country. What on earth is this? And then they changed the name of the INS, which I can never remember the new name, sort of like the School of Americas, I can never remember the new name of it. And I just...
Same old place with a new name.
Yeah. Right, same old place. I don't know. I keep thinking that people that go to jail because they pour blood on signs at the School of Americas, and we're still doing it. We just can't seem to stop. So somebody say something good.
Well, I was just gonna have you. Can you pull up the screen for a second? So we can just take a look at one of the questions that you asked, and just kind of rephrase it. Number two, given our political and social history, can we as a society leave violence behind? Is it possible for us to... What does violence bring to our society that we couldn't deal without? Are there things like that? Like police forces? Like... I don't know. Is there a place for the military in our society?
There are other kinds of issues that are underneath these things. Mm-hmm. We do passive violence to the entire world all the time by over-consuming our indulgence. We, all of us, are guilty of violence at a very meaningful level if you live in a country like Guatemala.
We couldn't get here without it. Mm-hmm.
We could, but we don't. Climb in.
I think a big, the reason, I mean, the numbers kind of scare me right now. I live in New York State, and I am surrounded by people that are hurt by September 11th, but I also go to a Lutheran church that believes that war is a good thing, and which is strange for me. But I think fear is an easy explanation for why 70% of our country stands behind war.
Yeah.
I think what it truly is that I've had to struggle in my own life to accept the guilt that I have. What you're talking about, that I am a consumer, that I grew up a consumer, that the clothes I'm wearing, I mean, I could take them off, but I'm still, that's who I am. And knowing that helps me a lot, but I think that 70% of the population doesn't want to think that they're killing those people. They want to think, oh, we're helping those people, or we are a good country, we are, and it's this, we have to make ourselves feel better.
I have a question for several of y'all have voiced that you don't see the church as promoting nonviolence and anything anti-war. I come from an extremely conservative town in Texas, and I'm not that liberal, but I am like the extreme left wing where I come from. And like my home congregation very much promotes the whole right-wing patriotism thing. Do other people see that in their churches, or is it just where I'm from?
It's in New York, too.
It's in Melbourne.
Well, the bishop of the Episcopal Church in Western Washington and his wife and a number of other leaders in the church have made trips to Palestine. Sister diocese relationship with the Diocese of Jerusalem, and are kept weekly in our church bulletin in prayer for resolution of the violence in that area. And in the diocesan newspaper, there's a very active Palestinian Concerns Committee at St. Mark's Cathedral that holds events. So it is in some of our churches. And it was, well, our bishop was one of those in the group that did as best they were allowed to surround the meeting of the WTO in Seattle the night before it opened.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we went over there. I was over there. I don't know.
No,
I went by myself. I went on the bus from Tacoma to Seattle, and during the day there were wonderful conversations between people who were connected to the WTO and the church people, Episcopalians, Catholics, Lutherans, are kind of like all the main line. And there were singers there, some huge black women. I don't know their name, but they sing like angels. They're wonderful. They were there. They're famous. Sweet Honey in the Rye. Oh, they are so good. Oh, we just were blown away. And they did stuff, and we had prayers. And the church was just packed full, and it was every room in that whole big church in downtown Seattle had people coming and going and having conversations, and there was a place where you could buy organic food all around this one room, and in the middle we were having this conversation about food and with the WTO, because it's really important that we get this food thing right. Anyhow, then we all got together, walked down to the kingdom, which was still existing at that point, and they wouldn't let us surround the area where the people were having dinner, the WTO people. But we surrounded the parking lot of the kingdom holding hands. I mean, there was a billion of us down there, and there was like one reporter, and a helicopter flew over, and it was pouring down rain. I mean, it was just uplifting, wonderful. And then the next day, these goons came and messed up what the labor people were trying to do, because they were really trying to do the right thing. Because I'm a Democrat, and I was in on the planning of the meeting of what they were going to do, and I decided I wasn't going to be there that day because I just knew it was not going to be for me. But they tried.
they really tried hard not to have anything really wild, at least the ones that came over from Tacoma. But there were some goons. I would guess about 20 people that were starting out with that, the idea of wrecking stuff, you know, breaking the windows out of Starbucks and stuff like that. But, and that's what we saw every night for a week. We saw that same crap. And they didn't even cover our little gigantic thing that we did the night before, the first night, Monday night.
Peace doesn't make news.
Peace doesn't make news. It just doesn't.
There was an article in the winter in the TNT that was Tacoma News Tribune that highlighted a variety of the churches and their leaders and their objections to the war effort. I remember that going on. And even though their congregation may not have been fully with them, they spoke out more freely against it, which was, I thought, was pretty interesting. But they still wanted to also support and represent the congregation that may not have felt that way. Because in Tacoma, we've got Fort Lewis,
and
McCord Air Force Base,
and
then, you know,
huge veteran population. Right.
Oh, and the Desmond Tutu Peace Foundation was originally housed at St. Mark's Cathedral in Seattle, but now has moved to New York because the dean there was really a refugee from South Africa because of his activities and racial struggles there before they got resolved.
Our big thing on that march was the Jubilee. So, you know, everything was a Jubilee. And we did win on that, too. A lot of debt was totally relieved for some countries.
I think it's important to remember that American media, and it's not just American, it's also internationally a lot, but American media is owned by major conglomerates. There is a lot of filtering in terms of what makes the news and what doesn't make the news. We're foolish to not think so, and people who want to know what's happening have got to really make an effort to... One of the sources that we use is subscribing to the Utney Reader, which gives you some, you know, things where you can read a smattering of what's happening in some of the alternative press. And
you
course,
probably don't subscribe to Mother Jones, though, huh?
We don't. We could.
No.
That's a good one. That's a good screen.
I think that something that runs through all your questions, I think, is the question of freedom at some level. Americans are so proud of their ability to have defended their freedom, and they're going to unite behind the idea of freedom, even though we're not really clear what kind of freedom we're talking about. And it's sort of at the basis of the political, social history and the troubles. And I think as a Christian, the question becomes, what kind of freedom are we talking about? And how does Christian freedom relate to my political or social freedom as my society defines it?
That is a great lead-in to the last hymn that we want you all to sing with us, truly.
This is a hymn that may be familiar to many of you, at least the tune might. It's actually called Finlandia.
Oh, yes.
which was written in the 1930s. The text itself, probably can't all see. Can you hear okay. The text itself was written in the 1930s, and sort of continuing with our theme of cyclical importance, this tune, Mary Travers did it also on her Morning Glory album in the 70s, and at a recent Indigo Girls concert, they closed their show with this song as well. So I actually wanted this to be part of our whole discussion time, but I was outvoted by family. So,
so now there it is.
That's right. So now we're going to do it as a closing hymn. And it does actually weave together perfectly what you were saying earlier about how we reconcile being thankful for the gifts that we have and yet feeling guilty that it's kind of plunder as well, and how we kind of reconcile that ourselves. And it just kind of talks about those issues. So let's sing it together, and I encourage part singing if you can.
Can I just say a word about part singing?
Yes.
One thing that not being a Mennonite and marrying into that community, the idea of the interdependence of parts, I think, is really theological. I think that there is a model of community that comes through the singing of parts. And if you ever have a chance, Goshen College Church in Goshen, Indiana, between 500 and 700 people on a Sunday morning going off of a pitch pipe and standing in the front, may be conducting with the lead and may not be. And everybody's singing, and you know, some of the chromaticisms don't happen exactly right, and it's a lot like life.
We have many things in common.
You're welcome. Thank you guys for coming.
I actually started like a year ago.
You know, it was really nice to see words back up. Sorry.